Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And welcome to From the Rookery End, a Watford Football Club podcast brought to you by The Athletic. My name is John. With me on Sunday, the day after Watford went out of the FA Cup in the third round to Manchester United, it was 1-0. You might have seen it. Is Mike?
Do you know what? I've woken up very relieved because I thought, what a Watford thing it would be to go and win the FA Cup and no one would be there in the ground to see it. So thank heavens we managed to extricate ourselves from this season's competition. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning to Jason.
I'll take that. Good morning.
Yeah, I think that's where we're going to go with this game in many ways. Do we care about it? Of course. How much do we care about it? Let's see. I suppose it was never going to be, Mike, you know, be able to look at it in terms of the wider picture of this season, because we made some changes, not as many as normal. Manchester United made a lot of changes. And again, they're a different team than we normally play in week in, week out. And, of course, it's still very early on in Cisco's reign here as the head coach of Watford Football Club. For you, though, a worthy game, a good game, a positive game to sort of come out of it overall?
It was a really difficult one. I couldn't, as the day wore on yesterday, I always look forward to Watford games. Whatever fixture it is, I always get excited about it and I always want Watford to win. And on the flip side, I've always been exceptionally critical of people who don't take the FA Cup seriously. It's really sort of rankled with me over the years when teams have announced or played lesser teams or rested their big players. It really, really bugged me because I love the FA Cup. But yeah, I couldn't quite work out how yesterday was. I was slightly fearful, I think, that Watford were going to get a sort of morale-sapping defeat against Man United, who have hit a rich vein of form. Slightly worried that we lose that sort of week in, week out of the Championship. But would that actually work in our favour? Allow a few players to come back and get a bit of game time in their legs. So I think what I settled on was the fact that we were underdogs again. We had nothing to lose, and we could go there and hopefully give it a decent shot. And I think after a reasonable start, we did just that. So I think going through, and it goes back to what I was saying about being critical of people who don't take the cup seriously, I think probably going through might have been something that we could do without this year. It's a weird old season. We're really struggling to get settled. So perhaps those extra games, where at the moment it's Saturday, Tuesday or Saturday, Wednesday, pretty much relentlessly, isn't it? So I've turned into that person I really don't like and said, not a bad outcome, I don't think. Reasonable-ish performance, and we don't have to worry about those extra games. So disappointed to be out, but also I can deal with it, if that makes sense.
We'll let you off for 1 year for being
yeah, absolutely.
Just this once. Jason, though, it was a game which felt for me, you know, we went behind after 5 minutes. It seemed to be that Man United and their younger players, even though they're not particularly young, they're young in our minds, and maybe look at them, but they're all well into their 20s now. And they scored after 5 minutes. It seemed a little bit, what do you reckon? It was a nervous Watford as well?
Yeah, definitely. That for the first sort of 15 minutes, I thought we looked scared of Manchester United. In particular, Daniel James. Now, he was a player I was certainly worried about with his pace running at us, and that's exactly what he did in the first 15. In fact, he probably could fit into the Watford side quite well, because his final ball or his shooting wasn't always that. we were probably a bit lucky on that front that he sort of, yeah, teared into us and then didn't quite give United the final product, and that's probably why he's not always in and around the first team, but he was definitely a threat for the first 15, and we really sort of struggled to deal with it. And then the set pieces as well, and I know it sounds sort of a common theme, we've struggled with set pieces in the past. We didn't cope well. They were doing this thing, and it felt like a sort of Graham Taylor thing to do, where United were lining two or three players up on the edge of the box, sort of one behind the other, and then they'd make their runs. And we were struggling to track those. And that's certainly how the first goal came about. I think Troosty Kong probably, he won't be too happy with sort of how he dealt with that for the first goal. And a little bit unlucky as well. I mean, McTominay did well to get his head to the ball and he sort of bounced down. It's ended up going right in the corner. I can't believe it, even as a high standard professional footballer, you know exactly where that ball's going to go when you head it down into the ground like that. He couldn't have placed it better if he was sort of standing a yard out and thrown it into the goal. So,
which incidentally is the only way we're going to score.
So we were probably a little bit unfortunate in that aspect of the goal, but it was certainly what United deserved to be at least 1-0 up after those first 15 minutes.
Let's talk about what you just commented on there, Michael. You know, look at the different positions in this squad, because again, as a unit, I was not expecting them necessarily to play together, because there were many changes. There were lots of new players. You know, there was Pedro coming back. There was Zinchenko with his debut. Will Hughes was back for his first 90 minutes. Mark Navarro at right back. But you know, there were lots of new players. Not as a unit necessarily at this point, but up front, it was a two up front. You know, Andre Gray, who we've talked about a bit lately, and the turn of Pedro, but up with them on the flanks, on the left, Zinchenko with his debut, and Israel Azar. Let's start with Azar. You know, it took him a long time to get into that game, but he did get into it in the end.
Yeah, I was a bit critical with that, my throwaway comment there. I think before we do say that, I think it is worth saying that Watford did really well to come back into the game. You know, they did have a really difficult start, going 1-0 down away at Old Trafford. I know it's a different Old Trafford that we've grown up with, but going 1-0 down against Premier League opposition, when no doubt the plan would have been to keep it tight and try and grow into the game, because as you say, John, it's a lot of players in getting used to each other. And, you know, I think there would have been a lot of Watford supporters whose shoulders, there would have been a big exhale of breath on the 5-minute mark across sort of Hertfordshire and the surrounding areas as Watford conceded. Oh, here we go again. But they actually fought their way back into the game, and they deserve a lot of credit for that. I wonder whether the fact it's a Premier League side playing Premier League way made it easier for Watford to do that. A bit more space, a bit less sort of Haysom Jason, a little bit less intensity perhaps played into Watford's hands and allowed them to come back into it. But nevertheless, they did and turned on a reasonable performance. But on the flip side of that, you wouldn't expect me to be positive for too long, I know. I thought we struggled up front, and Ismaïl Assar, I don't know, guys. I'm starting to worry. I'm starting to panic a little bit, because there's a couple of times where he had the freedom of Old Trafford down the right-hand side. We weren't doing anything particularly clever. We were just getting the ball in behind, down the right-hand side. He was doing what we know he can do, which was race onto it, burning the defender, leaving him for dead pretty much, and then sort of not knowing what to do with it. There was a couple of times where it looked like he could angle in and take a shot, but he tried to get the ball back across. He tried to get crosses in, and they were cut out. Now, I can't remember who, I think it might have been Geordie on the WhatsApp group that made the point, is the fact that strikers aren't able to keep up with him and get into positions quick enough to make the best use of his pace, is that causing issue? And I think that could be something. But I think, for me, every time he gets into a good position, he doesn't look like he knows what he's going to do with it. And it invariably ends in disappointment. And I don't know whether that's because the team around him aren't sort of playing to his strengths, or whether he's just lacking in confidence, or whether he's just lacking in the know-how to know what to do. But it just seems such a waste that, you know, it was more than once he comfortably went past the defender, found himself in decent positions, and just seemed to... Well, nothing came of it, did it? And it's a worry. Ismaïl Assar is a worry for me at the moment.
The one who isn't a worry, well, you can't really have a worry after one game of football, Jason, is the Zinkmeister, Element 30, as I like to call him. Philip made his debut. Again, once Watford in the game, he's starting to show what he is going to offer this team. He was out on the left, We know he can sort of play a slightly wider scope of attacking positions. For a debut at a, you know, even though it's an empty Old Trafford, it is still a big, huge stadium, which he's not used to playing in Norway. It was a great first appearance for him.
It was, absolutely, and we should enjoy it while we can, because after a few games of wearing a Watford shirt, I'm sure we'll knock that out of him.
Sorry. Oh, welcome to the show, Jason Parkin.
Sorry, I jest, of course, I hope. There was a moment in the first 5 minutes, I think the score might have even been 0-0, when we sort of saw his first evidence of what he's capable of, where I think someone had tried to back heel the ball into him to win a throw on. It sort of bounced off his chest. He's then sort of hooked the ball back from the touchline, and then shown a couple of nifty touches to get out of trouble, and then went on a run. And that made me sit up, and I was like, oh, hello, this is good. We've got something here. And it was all tidy. It was flashes of ability. As Mike has said, in the attacking department, we are struggling a bit, and we're going to need the players around him, I think, to make the most of his abilities. But it was a good, promising start. Like you say, John, it's Old Trafford. It's a Premier League team he's up against. Mike's talked about Sarr, and I think, for me, that's a lack of confidence, where he's sort of, using his pace, getting onto balls, and then hesitating and not sure what to do with it. That's all about confidence. I thought we saw the opposite from Zinchenko. I thought he looked confident. He looked part of the team as well. It looks like he's settled well. It is only one game, so let's see what he's like when he's up against the likes of Huddersfield and Barnsley and those guys, when perhaps teams will be set up more defensively, and he's got to do a lot more work to try and fashion things. But it was a promising start.
Yeah, Mike, Adam wrote an article about him. Got to speak to his old flatmate and old striking partner up in Norway. And you can read that article on theathletic.com if you haven't subscribed, of course. athletic.com/recurrent. But that article showed me a player that is hungry for success, able to mentally take all these things on, because he's in the right headspace. And that can only feel good going forward and sort of adapting himself to this Watford team and the Championship.
Yeah, that's why I'm not a professional footballer, by the way, because I don't want journalists speaking to my ex-flatmates.
I don't want either.
And I don't think perhaps that Zinchenko's the only one hungry for success. Come on, Isaac, your time is now. what I really loved about him, and I think that came through yesterday, that hunger, and I think is perhaps something that we might be missing a little bit. There's a lot of players who have been in and around the club for a little while, who are very comfortable. And I think what I really liked about him, and I think Jason summed it up perfectly with that little passage of play that he spoke about, was that he's looking to dictate things. He's looking to up the pace. He's looking to make something happen. Just having the ball isn't enough. He there was a couple of balls he really sort of played a nice little, he's looking for angles. He's looking to move the ball forward. He's looking to make things happen. And I think one of the words I've used frequently throughout the podcast is dynamism. We're just not dynamic enough when we have the ball, and he looked straight away like someone who could make things happen. So yeah, I was really excited by how he looked, and that hunger, that positivity is something that he's going to need to maintain, and hopefully I think he'll be able to bring other players into it, and they need to feed off that. I think you talked about, John, and I think you're right, it's different doing it against Manchester United. The stage is different, the atmosphere is different, regardless of the supporters, as you rightly said. You're playing against different players, and you do probably give an extra 5-10% when you're up against one of the most famous clubs in the world. But I don't, from what I saw, you'd hope that he plays that style, whether it's Huddersfield or whoever, or Real Madrid or whatever, because it's just the player he is. And I'm really excited to see what he can bring to the team, because we just need that spark. We spoke about lacking it, and I think we've been missing it all season. And we've spoken about Ivic and how his style of play was a bit suffocating and turgid, and I think that's fair. But the players didn't really help themselves either, did they? They didn't. There was never really much spark. And I just thought, there were only glimpses, but he just looked to make things happen. And I think that's where we're at. I think that can make such a big difference. And we're putting a lot on his shoulders already. And, I'm getting a bit overexcited over what was effectively, how long did he play for? An hour against Man United. But we need a catalyst. We need someone needs to light the blue touch paper or the yellow touch paper, whichever, or the white touch paper if that's the if we're away from home. You know what I mean? We need a spark. And the signs from Zinchenko yesterday were positive. I like the fact that he tries to dictate the pace, and that's what Watford as a team should be doing now for the rest of the season, starting on Saturday against Huddersfield.
I don't think we need to discuss this, but I think I'm just going to put a marker out there. You know, we talked about Andre quite a lot. We talked about Troy quite a lot, about the two forward players and who they should be. And last two players we talked about, both Saar and Zinchenko, the fact that they are creating, just need to finish it off. Is it them need to finish it off, or is it the fact that we don't have anyone with them, either because they're not quick enough, or the fact that they're just not quite the type of players that they need to go with? Pedro came back. Andre had a normal Andre Gray game. Troy wasn't even on the bench, and neither was Parica. That's the biggest question. Oh, and of course, as you said, Mike, Isaac Success is in that mix. It is still the worry, though. It is still the massive worry, isn't it, Mike, about this... Let's create stuff, but we're not going to be able to get it in the net.
Yeah, I mean, I actually find it quite difficult to focus on the game, such as the lack of Watford get the ball in dangerous areas a lot, and 99% of the time they don't do anything with it. The attacking, to say they've got zero attacking threat is incorrect, because we've already spoken about Ismail Assar getting in behind, and you know, you've mentioned set pieces as well, which are, you know, let's not, I don't want to be critical all the time, I really don't, but set pieces are relentlessly dreadful. And, you know, Jason spoke about how Man United were asking questions with their, you know, they scored from a corner, they were doing things with their free kicks. When we get a corner or a free kick, our first thought is like, right, I hope the defenders are switched on because the ball's coming back straight away. And, you know, I'm not being throwaway in that comment. We waste it. We waste our opportunities. So there are more than the strikers need to be better. I thought Andre Gray was actually quite tidy yesterday. I thought he played, you know, okay. And, you know, Pedro coming back from injury was all right as well. He got a decent shot off that went over the bar, and he's obviously going to be a tidy player. I think that what we need to do is link all this lot together. And we've all alluded to it in different ways already on this podcast. We sort of said, how do we exploit Saar's pace? How can, you know, Jason's asked, how can people link up with Zinchenko and make the most of his abilities? How do we get Andre Gray into the game? How do we get João Pedro into the game? We haven't managed to sort of unlock the talent of all these guys. It's a problem. I think going forward in itself isn't an issue, because, you know, we've got Ken Semmer who can play well as well, and, you know, we've got, you know, Kiko can ask questions when he plays. It's just, we look good going forward without ever looking like we're going to score. And that is a massive, massive, massive problem. And I don't think we should criticise Andre Gray too much for yesterday, because, you know, the chances didn't really come his way. He was neat and tidy. His control and hold up was better than it has been in previous weeks, which isn't necessarily saying much, because, I'm just, the Hoover's next to me, and I think if I played a pass into the Hoover, it might have better control than Andre Gray in recent in recent weeks.
Can I just ask, is that with it turned on or with it turned off?
Either or, Jace, to be okay. Perfectly frank. Nozzle extended or not. But yeah, I just think it's a massive problem. And someone made the point in the WhatsApp group, I think it was Colin, he used the phrase mobile striker. And I think that for me is what we're missing. Someone who is bending their runs, someone who is busting the gut to get into the right situation, someone who is able to touch and go, wiggle his way, roll a defender and take a touch and shoot. It doesn't happen, does it, at all? We're in the penalty box. We are such a limited threat. It's obscene, really, for a football club that is trying to get back into the Premier League. And, you know, you'd say mobile striker as well. João Pedro is mobile, is young and nimble and quick and strong, as we've seen. And Andre Gray to a degree. Isaac Success, perhaps. But, you know, that little sort of someone who can hold the ball, decent control, and get their shot off, turn and shoot or beat a man and shoot, it just doesn't seem to happen. And it's a problem we have to address. And I've stuck up for the club in saying that the January transfer window is notoriously difficult to make impactful signings, specifically in the number nine role, because that's, you know, it's the golden bullet, isn't it? Everyone is after a striker that can score goals. But it is now glaringly obvious that we need fresh blood in the striking role. Parica has shown glimpses, but he's hardly played, you know, got suspended, then there's been injuries, and he's not easy that mobile striker we'd be looking for. I don't think he is. So if we're to make the most of the squad we have, I think we need fresh blood in the number nine situation. I can hear people listening saying, oh yeah, nice one, Sherlock. Yeah, well spotted. But the reason I say it is because I know how difficult it is, and you can't just find, but we're going to have to gamble and find something. You know, there's Vidra is warming the bench at Burnley. There's people like Dwight Gale. Or do we take a gamble on someone else, a youngster? Or do we look within? You know, Sam Dalby was on the bench yesterday. Do you say, right, let's look at him? We need something, because as it stands, we could play forever and it just doesn't feel like we're going to score.
Jace, you know, the one fresh blood is 25. Will Hughes, back in the squad, though, fresh for this season and started his first game. Was there enough in terms of the midfield to sort of show lacking of, you know, no more Kapu and what we got? You know, the fact that Chalobah and Hughes, would that make you feel a bit better?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, there's a concern with Chalobah. He felt his hamstring towards the end of the game. You've got to hope that he's not out for too long, or if at all. But they can be nasty injuries, those ones. So we'll have to wait and see on that. It's interesting, isn't it, that midfield? I worry about the midfield. The way we play, if we're going to play sort of more attacking football, we've got a two-man midfield. There's a risk that could get exposed. And that sort of certainly looked the way in that first 15 minutes. However, as a midfield pairing, I'm trying to understand what that actually means in the context of the way Sisco seems to want to play, because we don't really play through the middle of that midfield, do we? We kind of get it wide or play it long early, and the midfielder sort of, if they're involved, maybe they're used as a simple out ball where the defenders have got nowhere else to go, or if the player's wide, have got nothing up the line, so they'll look inside for Hughes or Chalobah. But then they then seem to sort of release the ball quite quickly, the back to where it's come from, or they're making the long ball or the ball out wide. And I've not sort of seen anyone in these sort of first three games sort of play football as a pairing. So I think it's going to be about the off the ball movement, the understanding of, okay, are you going to push forward? Am I going to sit back a bit? Or no, I can see you've gone. So yeah, it's interesting. I think it's going to take a few games to work out. But I think yesterday I was more than happy with it. Both players did jobs defensively. Both players got forward when they needed to. Chalobah had a couple of pot shots from the edge of the box. And I think you commented, John, that he seems to have lost his touch from when he was 18 and banging them in off the bar at Leicester. It's there. I like the fact that Hughes is back. I think he did well for his first game back. Perhaps not quite the energy that we'd seen from him before, but I wouldn't expect that in your sort of first 90 minutes back after a long, long layoff. But I think we will get that from him. I think, and I hope, that he'll be in the team to stay. And also, what was key for me was at the end, when Chalobah did go off injured, Hughes was given the captain's armband. And he's definitely a player I want to see. I hope we can keep on to him. And I would love to see him as a future captain of Watford.
But that defence, Mike, was you know, we talked about the mistake for the goal and the set piece, but it was great for the rest of the game and some more shining stars, particularly Sierra Alta.
Yeah, I thought Sierra Alta was terrific again. I think he's stepped straight into the team. We were worried, weren't he? Came into the game against Brentford, I think, was the first game he started, alongside Ben Wilmot. And we were all a little bit concerned against Brentford with Tony being a threat up top. And he hasn't looked back, has he? He hasn't put a foot wrong. Cue him making an absolute howler on Saturday against Huddersfield. But I think he's looked consummate, hasn't he? He's looked brilliant. absolutely thrilled with him. And I think apart from his error yesterday, True Steekong has looked at, call it an error, is probably a bit stiff, but you know, he let his marker go. But as a central defensive pairing, I thought they looked, they look really good. But yeah, I think you're right to highlight him because he's come in later than everyone else, and he just hasn't looked out of place at all. I think he's looked really good. He's big, he's commanding, he's confident. He's everything you want in a centre back. So yeah, another great performance from him. Super stuff.
And of course, Jason at the back, right at the back, and another performance from Bartman, which we've seen in the League Cup, where if Ben was unfortunate to get injured, you would have absolutely no worries with Daniel being in goal.
I think so. And it's, I think he's got to the point now where he's put in a number of decent performances when asked to, that perhaps he deserves a run of games in the league. There, as I said earlier, there was nothing he could do about the goal. That was right in the top corner. Mm. And then when he was asked to make a save, the one of Juan Mata late in the first half, he produced. It was a good save, made himself or got the angle right, made it difficult for Juan Mata and made the save. There were a few, I think, long range efforts that he dealt with comfortably. And yeah, no errors to speak of. Talk about confidence again. I think he's another one who, despite the fact he's not being used that much and he's sort of sitting on the bench every week, is that he doesn't seem to let that affect him. And he seems to be a confident goalie, which you absolutely need to be when he's called upon. And I just think he deserves a run. When we do that, I don't know. It's obviously Sisko's call. Do you look towards the end of the season, maybe? I don't know what Foster's plans would be, but would that be the time to make a transition, if that's what we're looking to do, and bring him in and then sort of give him the opportunity to make that number one shirt his own? I don't know what you guys think.
I think he looks great, and I think his loan spell in Scotland was impressive, wasn't it? The supporters there took to him very, very quickly. He had a very good season there, and as Jason says there, I think every time he stepped in, he's looked great. And you know, regardless of the GoPro stuff, Ben Foster has made a couple of mistakes, hasn't he? Goalkeepers are going to, let's face it. It's the nature of the beast. But yeah, that does feel like perhaps, you know, at the end of the season or before, there might be a transition. But it, either or, you're not going to be worried, are you, at this stage? Which is a great situation to be in. And I've been really impressed with Backman because he's had to be patient. He's had to bide his time, and coming into games cold without much game time must be very, very difficult, especially in that position where you've got no choice but to be completely switched on from minute one. So yeah, really impressed with Backman.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Well, luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
It's not really a great week, Mike, for many reasons for everyone in the country, but particularly a few Watford fans who we had to say goodbye to.
Yeah, some desperately sad news at the start of this week, which I think serves to bring everything into context and serves to bring home just how important and big and hopefully comforting the Watford family can be. We got news, sadly, at the start of this week. Firstly, that many of you will know Pete Fincham. He was on the recent podcast talking about the incredible night at St Andrews. Pete was so articulate and eloquent talking about that incredible night. And what you won't have known listening to that is that Pete recorded that sat in Great Ormond Street Hospital, where he was looking over his son Freddie, who had gone through an incredibly tough time. And has done for quite a long time, really. And Freddie recently had an operation that sadly didn't go to plan, and was very, very unwell as a result of that. And sadly, last weekend, at the age of 14, Freddie passed away. Pete was kind enough to let us know, and to let us know that he listened to the podcast with him, and he always enjoyed it. So desperately, desperately sad news, and obviously the thoughts of all of us are with Pete and his family and his friends. Just heartbreaking news. And then someone that I know through sitting in the rookery, and then Jason knows through work, Dave Mullins, his dad, Jim, sadly passed away at the start of the week as well. Again, an ardent listener to the podcast, which was great to hear. But, you know, I sat close to those guys for ages in the rookery, and Jim was always on his feet screaming and shouting at Watford, a passionate Watford supporter, there at every game. You'd see him at away games as well. So desperately sad news that people, you know, close to us in different ways have lost loved ones at different ends of the spectrum, but it doesn't make any difference at all, does it? And it's just so sad and so, you know, humbling to hear that people listen to the podcast and that people feel they're able to talk about the podcast in these times, I think is incredible. But I think it speaks to the wider situation, the comfort that being part of a, you know, people say football family a lot, and it can sound a bit glib and a bit meaningless. But I think in times like this, and these aren't the only people that have lost people recently, of course, but in times like this, I think it really means something that people can find comfort knowing that there's people with a shared passion that care and love and can provide support and some words of comfort in these desperate times. Football is just a game, but it's also so much more than that. It provides us with a massive sort of network of support, and I think it's important to remember that when we get agitated by a mistake on the pitch or an own goal or when a result doesn't go our way. There is huge things happening in the world, and there is huge things happening in people's lives that we know and we've heard about this week. So our thoughts are very much with Pete and his family and all his loved ones, and our thoughts are with Dave and his family and all his loved ones at this desperate time. Know that we're thinking of you, know that the Watford family is thinking of you, and hopefully that is able to bring you a very, very small piece of comfort. And I think it's important that we all take stock when we hear news like this, and to be grateful for what we have, grateful for Watford, grateful for sport, grateful for the passion that we have, and just take a minute and realise what's important in this life. And if you can, when you listen to this, just spare a thought for Pete, spare a thought for Dave and his family, raise a glass of something. If you've got family nearby, give them a little squeeze and a hug. Got warm thoughts to think, do that. It's important we do that. So all the best to Pete, all the best to Dave and family. We're with you. Come on, you horns.
And to sort of try and lift things slightly, to have a positive thing that we know the podcast was for Jim especially, we thought we'd do what we've done every FA Cup for the last few years. And I know that it's a bit of suffering for Mike and Jason. But let's do another. I know I promised I wasn't going to, but I am. FA Cup quiz.
It's a straightforward quiz. The one who gets most points wins. Question number one. Jason, to go first. Since 2000, that's the year 2000, how many times have Watford not made it past the third round?
Oh, crikey.
Nearest wins.
Okay, I'm going to say six.
Okay, now Mike, Jason said six. Can you straight away think more than six or less than six?
No, well, I was going to say five straight away.
Straight with five?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, actually, after yesterday, it's 11.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah. But most of that is to do with the very, very start of this millennia. 2001, 2002, 2003, we caught it quite well and got to the semi-final. But then 2004 and 2005 and 2006, we didn't get past the third round. I know it was a long time ago. So point to Jason, even though you were quite way off. Question number two. What was the total attendance of the 2018-2019 FA Cup run to the final? Out of all the games we played, what was the total attendance? Mike first this time.
Right, so I'm just working backwards. Right, bear with me.
Does that include the final?
Yeah, yeah.
239,000.
239,000. Okay, Jason.
I'm going to say lower. Yeah, I'm going to say lower because we had Woking, didn't we, in the third round. I'm not sure how many would have gone to Newcastle, how interested they would have been in the cup. Their manager certainly wasn't at the time. And QPR isn't a massive ground, so I'm going to say lower. 238,999.
You are both much nearer than the two people I tested this out on. The actual answer is 223,497. Because Jason, you're absolutely right. Just under 6,000 at Woking. 34,000 at Newcastle. QPR 17. Crystal Palace, even though it was at Vicarage Road, was only 18,000, of course. We didn't give them the full
Vicarage Road name. Oh, brilliant.
And then 85,000 in the semi-final and the final. So, yeah, 2-0 to Jason. Question number three. What was the goal difference in that FA Cup run between 2018-2019? What was the goal difference for Watford? Jason, to go first on this one.
I'm trying to think what the scores were. Were we plus one?
You think plus one. Okay. Mike.
So, Mike, I've given this absolutely no thought at all. I'm going to go with zero.
The nearest was Jason. So, Jason, you're absolutely correct. Plus one in those games. It's Woking, Newcastle, QPR, Palace, Wolves and Man City. But you're behind, Mike. But actually, if you win this next round, it'll be all square.
Oh,
three points
no.
are available. Now, we're going to hand over to the From the Recurring crew, two members of the From the Recurring crew, Geordie and DCW. They played a game of Who Am I? The classic parlour game where you may write a name on a post-it note, stick it on someone else's head, and they have to ask questions and guess who that person is. They, of course, have a former Watford player on their post-it note, virtual post-it note that they stuck on each other's forehead when they did this the other night. They can only ask yes and no questions, and the one who asked the least number of questions will win you the 3 points. So, Mike, would you like to take Geordie or would you like to take DCW?
I will take Mr. Geordie Connor.
And that means, Jason, by default, we have DCW.
I'm more than happy with DCW. I can't believe you've dismissed him so quickly, Michael. That's a disgrace. No offence to Geordie, of course.
Come on, JC. Let's go,
mate. See how they did.
Geordie, you are going to try and guess who you are first. So I know the player that is on this yellow post-it note on your head. Who do you think it is? Take it away.
Okay, I've not really done myself any favours here by thinking about how I'm best going to narrow down from the hundreds of players who have turned out in yellow.
Thousands, I suppose.
Thousands. I was going to say yellow or blue, knowing John, he's probably given me one from like when they played in that kind of rainbow kit that you see on these kind of retro kits. Okay, am I a player who played under Graham Taylor?
No.
Am I a player who was brought in by the Pozzos?
No.
Did I play in the 21st century?
Yes. I had to think about which century was which there.
Yeah. So it's between 2000... and the Pozzos coming in. Ah, okay. Am I British?
Well, it's a slightly tricky one for me to answer, which I suppose is giving you a sizable clue. But yes, you are British.
That's sort of giving me a clue, but also throwing me a little bit. I've got some names coming in my head. Am I Irish?
No.
Okay, I wanted to make sure it was one of these kind of Anglo-Irish players. Goodness me. Am I a midfielder?
Another good question, really. No, not a midfielder.
Am I a defender?
No.
Am I a striker?
Yeah.
A British attacker from the 2000s. Oh my goodness, Did I come through the academy?
No, not an academy product. I've answered every question honestly so far, but I do fear I may have sent you potentially down the wrong route. But keep going. All will become clear.
Oh no,
more than one of them, actually.
Oh, right.
Sometimes there's more than one yeses, more than one noes.
See, I'm thinking, like, when you say that, I'm thinking like someone like Tommy Mooney, who can play at the back and up front. It's not him, is it?
I can't answer any questions that don't have a yes or no.
Is it Tommy Mooney?
Answer. It's not Tommy Mooney. I don't know whether we should perhaps introduce a limit on guesses. You've guessed Tommy Mooney and it's not Tommy Mooney, but I think you need to be relatively certain if you're going to have a guess. Let's say you have three guesses.
Okay.
So you've got two guesses left.
British striker from the 2000s who may not be British and may not be a striker.
Yeah, that's basically the long and short of it, yeah. Depends which way you look at it.
Is it somebody you would recognise? Yeah, if you saw him in the street, would you go, oh my God, it's... Or would you...
Well, I would like to think you'd recognise every player, Geordie, if you saw them on the street. But I'd back you that if you were walking down the street and this bloke was coming towards you, you'd look twice and think, oh, yeah, that's so-and-so, isn't it?
Am I Jamaican?
Yes, sort of. Okay.
So it's an Anglo-Jamaican versatile attacking player from the 2000s.
I mean, the listeners surely have got to be screaming at their phones.
Yeah,
now.
I'm wondering, am I Joby McEnough?
Is that a guess?
Yeah, it's a guess.
That's a guess? You are not Joby McEnough.
Oh, dearie me. I'm sure people are screaming, and I'm sure I'll go, oh my God. This is one of these... So the only other one I can think is, am I Marcus Gale?
Is that your final answer? Your final guess?
Yeah.
You are indeed Marcus Gale.
Before I said Mooney, I was going to say Gale. But when you said he was British, that's what made me think. Oh, yeah. That's why I went Mooney instead of Marcus Gale.
Born in Hammersmith. Very much English born. But obviously, of course... did represent Jamaica at international level.
And then JB McEnough, because you'd said attacker, but...
Well, that's the thing with Gale, right? Gale was a striker for most of his career, but obviously had that amazing season for us at centre-back where he was player of the season under Lewington.
Yeah, no, he was a great player for us. Am I right in believing he was a bit of a... not a boo boy, but one of that scapegoat a little bit, and then he got moved back and suddenly he turned into like... Beckenbauer, almost.
That's pretty much how I recall it. He was obviously one of the Viali signings, wasn't he? We signed him from Rangers. He'd been at Wimbledon before that. We signed him for 950 grand, I think, from Rangers. And he didn't do anything, did he, under Viali, really, in that season. He played on the left wing, I think, a bit under Viali. And then Lewington moved him back. And he was amazing. Absolute Rolls Royce of a defender at the back.
Yeah. And left-footed as well, wasn't he? So always an advantage to have a good commanding left-footed defender. He said wistfully, wondering if Marcus Gale still has a pair of boots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, come back.
So Mike, Geordie there representing, asked 13 questions. So DCW has to do it in less than 13, Jason.
Come on, DCW.
What do you think of that performance then, Mike?
Well, I think DCW was intentionally trying to muddy the waters, wasn't he? He was saying, oh yeah, I've been very honest. Oh, well... You know, who are you? Donald Trump. Of course you should be honest. We don't just want your truth, Mr. Cameron Walker.
He helped him by saying that.
Oh, did he really?
He could have just answered the questions. He answered the questions perfectly correctly.
He's planting seeds of doubt from minute one.
Let's just see if Geordie is as clean cut as you think he's going to be in the next round. Jason, DCW is representing your good self, and he has to guess the player that is on his forehead. The player who he has to guess, because this has been pre-recorded, I can tell you now, was Stephen Glass. So let's see how quickly DCW can guess Stephen Glass.
I'm glad I've gone that you went first, because now you've kind of shown me the way to get it started. My first question will be, have I played under the Pozzos?
No.
Did I play for Watford under Graham Taylor?
No, didn't play under GT either.
Okay, right. Let's mix it up a little bit. Am I an academy product?
No.
To take your lead, I'm afraid I'm going to have to copy you. Have I played for Watford in the 21st century?
You have.
Between the two Italians, between Vialli and then stops before the Pozzos. So, go on then. Did I play under Vialli?
Yes.
You had to think about it, though. You weren't sure.
Yeah, you did. You played under Luca.
Not an academy product. So, signing. Didn't play under Graham Taylor. So, did I stay at the club after Vialli?
Yes.
Did I play under Eddie Boothroyd?
No.
So I'm very much assuming this player is a Lewington era stalwart. Right, so I did play under Vialli, but the pause when you had to check, I saw you looking at the Wikipedia page when I asked if you played under Vialli, so it makes me think I didn't play that much under Vialli. Maybe I was brought to the club and then stayed. So there is one man that I am thinking of who I think I might be, but I'm going to try and narrow it down. Am I a former Watford captain?
I'm going to say no.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, that's disappointing. That is big. That's a big dent in who I was going for. I'm just going to double check, though, just in case you've got your data wrong. This is quite a specific question. Did I come to the club with dreadlocks and leave the club bald?
No.
Okay.
I know exactly who you're thinking there.
I'm not Gavin Marn, then.
Is that a guess?
That's not a guess, because I've eliminated through my clever questioning, Geordie. I need to actually think about this now, and I thought I had it. So, am I British?
Yes.
Did I first come to the club on loan?
No.
Okay. I should be writing down my questions, really. I can't remember what I've asked. Was I signed in the summer when Vialli arrived? So before the start of that season, or around the start of that season when Vialli arrived?
Yes.
Okay. Christ, I'm trying to remember who he signed. I can only remember all the foreign lads. I played under Lewington, but I didn't play under Boothroyd. Neil Ardley was signed in the Lewington, wasn't he, in that summer? So it wouldn't be him. Okay, let's get some positions then, shall we? Am I a striker?
No.
Am I a midfielder?
Yes.
Goodness me. I'm really stumped, actually. I'll just have to go for more positions, I think, narrow it down. Am I a central midfielder?
No.
Am I a winger?
Yeah, I'd say winger is a fair shout. I could let you dwell on that kind of confusion like you did to me with your multiple nationalities, but I'll let you off. I think winger is a fair position for him.
Fine. I mean, I might be dwelling a long time here, I think, because I've got absolutely no idea who this could be. Did I score? No. Let me think. So, did I make more than 100 appearances for Watford?
No.
Did I make more than 50 appearances for Watford?
Yes.
So there's obviously a reason why he didn't play loads of football in that time. Was I an injury-prone player?
I don't remember you being particularly injury-prone. I mean, I think players have injuries over the course of a few seasons, but I don't recall him being like a player who we kind of were constantly without.
I think I've got it, actually. I think I might have just had a bolt from the blue. I'll just double-check, though. Did I score a memorable goal in an FA Cup quarter final from a free kick?
You did.
Am I Stephen Glass?
You're Stephen Glass.
Hey! Oh, Stephen Glass!
I tried to slip in a clue when I said you might be brittle, but I don't remember you being injury prone.
Very good. But, very good. Yeah.
Well done. I actually had dinner with Stephen Glass.
Did you?
Accidentally.
Accidentally?
I'm unplanned dinner.
I was going to say, how do you accidentally have dinner with someone?
A guy I used to go to games with, a guy, a mate, Michael Alley, and I, for some reason, that year decided to sponsor Wayne Brown.
I thought it might have been Wayne Brown at one stage.
Yeah, we both went to university in Colchester, and I think he was from that way, or he maybe played for Colchester or something. I can't remember. But
yeah, he managed them as well, I think.
And then we went to the awards night. Alan Nielsen and Stephen Glass were sponsored by companies, and no one had turned up. So they were sat at their table looking all on their lonesome. Had a bizarre situation where someone came up and said, would you mind Alan Nielsen and Stephen Glass sitting at your table? And I was a bit like, no, you know, by all means, you know. So I ended up almost more players than sponsors. Good old Chinwag. But both, all three of them are nice guys on the day, you know, kind of attentive and good personalities. Different time for Watford.
Yeah. We could do with all three of those sort of players in their prime now, really, I think. Big lump at the back, decent winger and a great attacking midfielder in Alan Nielsen.
Well, Nielsen we could definitely do with. I mean, he's one of the best players we've had in this division. I would definitely be happy to see Alan Nielsen, a prime Alan Nielsen in the signed in the transfer window. I mean, we just signed a Dane, didn't we?
Yeah, we've come full circle. We can but dream.
Yeah, hopefully more Alan Nielsen and Lars Melvang.
We're the Orns, you're the Orns.
So, if you were counting, you might have noticed DCW asked 21 questions. So, the 3 points go to Mike as we go into the fifth question. But, Jason, I think DCW just got a bit lost. He didn't have anything to grab hold of, did he?
I was going to say there's lots of nice, patient build-up play, but he couldn't quite finish. Does that remind you of any particular football club?
Yeah, so the final question is, who are all the teams that have knocked Watford out of the FA Cup in the last 20 seasons? So since the year 2000, who are all the clubs that have knocked us out, as in the team that beat us? There is 1 point for each. You'll take it in turns. If you get one wrong, you are out, and the other person will get to continue to guess. So who are the teams that knocked Watford out of the FA Cup since the year 2000? Jason, you may go first.
Manchester City.
Correct. How many times?
If you include the final, I think it's 3, isn't it?
It is 3, correct. Mike.
Millwall.
Correct. Just a once. Won the fourth round in 2017. Jason.
Chelsea.
Yeah. How many times, Jace?
3 times.
4 times. 2009, 10. 2004, where we lost in the replay, and 2015. 3 of those, of course, in the third round. Mike.
Man United.
Manchester United, of course, twice now, this year, and of course, in the semi-final in 2007. Jason.
Southampton.
How many times, Jason?
Twice.
Yes, twice. Fourth round in 2018. And also the semi-final in 2003. Mike.
Crystal Palace.
The semi-final.
Spurs.
When was that, Jason?
Was it when Sean Murray made his debut? That's what did it for me. I think we lost to them then. Fourth round? I can't remember what year.
Fourth round in 2012 under Sean Dyche. Mike.
I'm struggling now. Brighton.
Yes, Brighton in 2011, fourth round.
Oh, damn it! That was the one I had left sort of on the side. Right, what else we got?
7 left.
Okay, right. I am going to say, Arsenal.
Right, third round in 2002.
We've had Tottenham.
Yep.
Had Chelsea. Had City, had United, had Arsenal, had Southampton. Everton.
Everton is a 2-1 win with a goal from Ty Mooney. Unfortunately, he did go through in the third round in 2001. It's currently 5 apiece.
Wow. I am struggling. I'm going to take a punt at Wolves.
In 2008, we lost 4-1 in the fourth round.
Oh, yes.
Jason, up to 6. Mike.
I've just had one come to me from nowhere.
Go on then.
Sheffield Wednesday.
That's wrong. We didn't play.
Well, that's why it
Sheffield
came to me from
Wednesday.
That was late. That was late 90s, wasn't it? Sheffield Wednesday.
That's what. Or was it the League Cup?
It wasn't in the League Cup.
League Cup on Viali.
So proud of myself.
I'm proud of you too, Mike.
The teams you did not get in the year 2000, we played Birmingham, of course, in December. Third round. Bolton in 2006, Fulham in 2005. And the last one you missed was last year's team that put us out was, of course, Tranmere.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I should have got Tranmere. The others I'd have struggled with. I have got my recollection of the others is maybe that Birmingham one, but the others I can't really remember at all. But
the Birmingham one I remember.
It was a close run FA Cup quiz for 2020. It was a lot of fun. Thank you very much to Geordie and DCW and for Mike and Jason for taking part. And the final score was 8 to Mike, but 9 to Jason.
Yes, thank you. And well played, DCW, for your sterling efforts in the victory. You were a big part of that.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
Back to the league, gentlemen, and it's we seem to be happy. Things are coming into place, but there's still some big, heavy gaps that need to be addressed, maybe internally, maybe externally. We're back with another podcast in the week with Adam Leventhal. Mike Sisko, last night was the third game for him, but there's still a long way to go before he has really fully implanted his ways on this squad.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but we haven't got a long way to go. So hopefully what I would like to think is the last sort of couple of weeks will prove a little bit of a clearing of the decks. We've had a tough week for lots of Watford supporters following the Swansea game. That got a lot of people's heckles up and it wasn't a great performance. We've got the distraction of the FA Cup out of the way. I hate saying it's a distraction, but we've got nothing else to focus on now apart from the league. Zinchenko's come in and look good. So, yeah, let's clear the decks. And we keep saying it, the season really does have to start now because otherwise we're going to run out of road. It's a great opportunity to put right a performance that, you know, we away at Huddersfield, we were awful. We get a chance now to remedy that pretty quickly. I think they're a team we should be able to get at. So we're running out of road, running out of excuses. They have to get going, but there's no reason they can't. Like you say, Sisko has bought in. You know, we do look better than we did under Ivic. We look a little bit more free-flowing. We look like we're enjoying it a little bit more. But they've got to click. They've got to unlock it. They've got to make the most of what they've got at their disposal. It hasn't happened at all so far this season. It's been a damp squib. I mean, halfway through January, new year. We need to see a new Watford. Come on, you golden boys, for heaven's sake, please.
Thank you much, Jason, for your time.
Well, thank you.
And thank you, Michael.
No problem. Look, I'm sorry about the quiz as well. I embarrass myself on these week in, week out. Next time there's a quiz, I'm going to get Arlo to come and do it instead of me.
It's a lot of fun. Hope everyone at home is happy and safe. And we hope that football and hopefully this podcast can give a lift if you're not in your favourite place at the moment. Remember, if there's anything you need, then please give us a shout on our DMs. They are open on Twitter. But also the club, Mike, with their Hornets at home and supporting the NHS is back in full force.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, it's just a fabulous innovation from the club that if you feel like you need a pick-me-up or someone that you know needs a pick-me-up, you can get in touch with Watford. They will talk to you and work out what the situation is, work out what the best approach will be. They make phone calls, and it's just that Hornets at home thing is brilliant because I think it recognises the situation we're in at the moment, which is difficult for so many people. And just to reiterate, just do stay safe, do look after each other, do shout, do talk to each other, talk to us. It's tough out there at the moment, and talking can help. And yeah, Watford helping out the NHS again, which was which came to light over the weekend is brilliant. I think I tweeted that football is about more than just what happens on the pitch. It is about community. We've talked about all the things that we miss, which is the camaraderie, the social aspect, the community side of things, and the fact that Watford are working hard to make sure that even though fans can't be at the ground, they are making their presence felt in the community. And that that means a lot to me as a Watford supporter. So I'm incredibly proud of the club for continuing to do that. There are a whole heap of really, really good people at Watford Football Club that have Watford ingrained in their hearts, and they are working tirelessly to not just to help get Watford out of the division, but to make sure Watford do the right thing as often as is possible. And I think, you know, it was a little bit disheartening last week to see people so upset about various things. I get it. I understand it completely. But I think this week, I think it's the news that's come out, the Hornets at home, the NHS thing, I think it's important to remember that we are involved with, we support, we have a club at our heart who do good things and have, you know, they are a good club who really work hard to make a difference. And I think that's something we can all be proud and get behind. So, yeah. Be proud of Watford, stick with them and stick with each other. Be good, be safe, be generous, be kind. Let's look after each other. We can get each other and Watford through this together.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.